77. Lydia. Resting on the shifting vines, Lydia struggled to catch her breath, her eyes on the ribbons of blight streaming into the ground from the woman's fingers, dragging life from the earth in order to feed the strange parasitic plant she'd become. Was there a way to extract her? To separate person from plant? Shoving aside vines, Lydia examined the places where they grew into the woman's body. She could cut her free, then attempt to operate to remove them from the inside of the woman's body. Taking a firm grip on her knife, Lydia sawed at a smaller one, cringing as clear liquid spilled on her and trying not to focus on how the woman shifted and moaned, the process obviously painful. But her mark told her the woman's life was strong, so she persevered, moving on to the woman's hands. Twisted vines protruded from her fingertips, digging into the earth like blackened roots, and Lydia's attempts to pull them up yielded no results. So she started sawing at them with her blade. Blight spilled from the severed roots, filling the air with its stink and coating her hands, but she didn't allow herself to stop. Not even when the woman started quivering, the whole mound shaking around them as though caught in a storm breeze. "It's okay," Lydia whispered. "I'll get you out. I'll help you." Yet as she said the words, the life in the woman began to fade, growing less radiant by the second. Cutting her free of the blight was going to kill her. Lydia froze, indecision holding her in place. If she carried on, the woman would die. But if she didn't, the blight would only continue to spread. What if she didn't choose it? What if this was forced upon her? What if she'd stop, if given the chance? Malachi had once said, "What is one life in comparison to thousands?" when she'd sent Lydia to murder her father. Lydia had chosen to spare that one life, and gods, but she'd had cause to regret it. "Do it. Don't be such a coward." But her whole body was trembling, tears running down her cheeks. "This woman is a murderer. She is killing hundreds, thousands." Clenching her teeth, Lydia dragged the blade across the remaining roots. Then she held her breath, hoping and praying that the woman would survive, that she'd open her eyes and take a breath. But as she watched, the woman began to wither like a cut flower, the light from the mound slowly fading as they both died. Panic flooded Lydia's veins because there was no way the guards weren't going to notice that one of the mounds had gone dark. Scrambling backwards, she extricated herself from the tangle of dead vines, only barely reaching one of the living mounds when she heard shouts of dismay from behind her. Casting a backward glance, she saw the guards had approached the dead mound, panic on their faces. "Run." Keeping low, Lydia raced toward the town, heart hammering as she joined the masses in the streets. Weaving through them, she slipped in the side door of the inn and paused, hearing Baird's booming laugh. And Killian's. Peering around the corner, she saw him clicking glasses with Baird and Agrippa, piles of cards and coins littering the table, a half dozen pretty girls squeezed into the benches around them. Stomach tightening, Lydia spun away and climbed the stairs to their room. Inside, she flung off her cloak and used the water in the basin to clean off the sticky, clear liquid she'd gotten covered in while hacking at the vines, angry accusations rising and falling on her lips. That she'd been out searching those awful mounds for Malachi while he'd been carousing. That she'd been trying to save a corrupted tender while he'd been flirting with pretty girls. Over and over, she rehearsed exactly what she was going to say to him when he finally dragged his sorry ass up to the room, her script growing more elaborate and scathing with each revision. Then she heard a thump in the hallway and a muttered oath, then male laughter. A second later, the handle of the door jiggled. "Gertrude?" Not Killian's voice, but Agrippa's. Concerned, she crossed to the door, unlatched it, and heaved it open, to find Killian slumped between Agrippa and Baird, all three of them grinning wildly. "Are you drunk?" she demanded, crossing her arms. Killian squinted at her, his eyes swollen and bruised, pieces of blood-stained cloth shoved up his broken nose.
"No?"
Agrippa and Baird both laughed, dragging him in and tossing him on the bed.
"In case he forgets," the former said, "could you remind him that we leave tomorrow? Dawn seems a bit aggressive, all things considered, so let's say midday."
Leave? Trusting Killian would have answers, she only nodded, shutting and locking the door behind them. Then she strode over to the bed and snapped, "You'd better have a good explanation for why you're jaw-droppingly drunk, because from my standpoint, it appears one of your more short-sighted plans, and that's saying something." Killian didn't answer. And when she leaned down to peer at him in the dim light, she realized he had already fallen asleep. "I don't think so," she snapped. And going to retrieve the wash basin, she tossed the icy contents on his face. Shouting in alarm, he fell off the side of the bed, then staggered to his feet, trying to extract his sword. But instead, he tripped and fell, landing hard on his ass. Glowering up at her, he said,
"What was that for?"
"For being stupid," she said, resting her hands on her hips. "And for falling asleep while I was talking to you, and because I was crawling inside those awful plant mounds while you were carousing and having fun."
"Oh, yes,"
he snapped back, dragging himself upward onto the bed.
"Because getting beaten half to death by a giant is such a delight. And I was doing things too, so."
Then he frowned.
"You were supposed to be in this room."
"I was looking for any sign of Malahai." Killian scrubbed a hand through his hair.
"She's not in Dead Ground. Rufina has her in her fortress, a place called Helatha."
"Right." Lydia swallowed, and not wanting to feel as though what she'd endured was in vain, she said, "As we suspected, the mounds are causing the blight. But they aren't just plants. The corrupted tenders are inside them. From what I can tell, they are stealing the life from the earth, and it's turning them into sort of a plant-human hybrid." Killian stared at her.
"Pardon?"
Hissing out a frustrated breath, she pushed a glass of water into his hand, then sat on the bed next to him, explaining what she'd seen.
I tried to cut her free," she admitted. "She died. I left the rest of them alone. Murderer."
"Ideally, we'd dispatch the others."
He rubbed at his temples, seemingly unaware of the guilt twisting through her.
"But with one of the tenders dead, they are bound to increase the guards around the remainder. I don't want to do anything that jeopardizes us getting into Darren and finding Malahai."
Relief flooded through her because the thought of killing the rest had made her stomach twist. "Did you figure out how to manage that?"
"Yes, I got a job."
Flopping back down on the bed, he sighed.
"As hired muscle for Agrippa and Baird's business. They escort people through the Liratoras for a steep price. Apparently picking a fight with me was an audition of sorts."
"But you can't," she started to say, and only then realized that he was using his left arm. And a quick assessment of him using her mark revealed that his ribs were no longer fractured. "Who healed you?"
"A corrupted named Sly."
Groaning, Killian rolled across the bed to the half that wasn't soaked with wash water.
"Agrippa paid for it with some of his own life. Literally. Apparently, the corrupted can act as a conduit and take life from one person to give to another. Agrippa's not bad, once you get to know him. The girls around here sure like him.
He's from Celandor.
Killian turned his head.
What?
His heritage is mixed, but there's no mistaking that golden hue to his skin. Or his name, she said. And he's also carrying the style of blade favored by the Empire's legions. So I bet if you get his shirt off, you'll find he's got a legion number tattooed on his chest. That said, he's fluent in Mutamorian and has no accent, so I'd say that however he got here, it was some time ago.
Do you think it's too risky to ask him?
Killian didn't answer. And when she looked up, she saw his eyes were closed. And a second later, he started to snore. Sighing, she rose and pulled off his boots, tossing them aside. Unbuckling his sword belt, she leaned the weapon next to the bed and then pulled the blanket over him. Courtesy of his broken nose, he was snoring loudly now, and retrieving the lamp, she looked over his remaining injuries, it requiring all of her self-control not to erase them. Instead, she brushed back his hair from his face, her heart tightening at the silky feel of it against her fingers. But he was sworn to Malahai. Part of her wanted to soothe the hurt in her heart with the knowledge he hadn't chosen this path, but she knew that wasn't the entire truth. He might not love the queen, but he was dedicated to her and would remain so for the rest of his life. Her eyes burning, Lydia put another few pieces of wood on the fire to keep the room warm through the night. Wet or not, she looked longingly at the vacant space on the bed next to Killian, but instead ensconced herself on a chair, the other blanket pulled around her. Then she stared at the flames until sleep and exhaustion finally took her.